Our scripture this morning is three simple verses from Matthew 24. Keep awake, therefore, for you don't know on what day your Lord is coming. Understand this, if the owner of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake. It would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an unexpected hour. I remember I was about 10 years old when I first realized there were verses like these in the New Testament that talked about Christ's returning and the end of the world as we know it. I got really worried. It wasn't that I was that worried about being judged, because I was a pretty good kid and didn't have much sense of sin beyond that. What I was worried was what I was going to miss out on if Jesus came back right away. I wanted to grow up, to go to college, to get married, have kids someday. What if Jesus came back before I got the chance? I really did not want that to happen. But I also sort of knew I was supposed to want Jesus to come back. And I didn't quite know what to do with that. It was very confusing. Plus, after a while, I realized, you know, they were saying this 2,000 years ago. And they made it sound like it could happen any minute. But it didn't happen. It hasn't happened for 2,000 years. Many of you may have your own memories and associations, questions and uncertainties that come up when you think about these kinds of scriptures. This first Sunday of Advent, scripture readings always focus on these hard-to-know-what-to-do-with passages. And I'm always tempted to skip them. Let's get on to the stories we really love. You know, Zechariah and Elizabeth, Mary and Gabriel. Those are, they feel good. But the first Sunday of Advent urges us to give these kind of scriptures another look. There is this persistent theme throughout the New Testament about somehow, some way, Christ coming back. And this theme about being awake and being watchful and being ready. But for what exactly? For those first Christians, the expectations were clear. Jesus was going to come back, and it was going to happen soon, any day, any hour. No longer, they thought, just as Jesus of Nazareth, the rabbi, but as the risen Christ, the revelation of God, the beginning and the end of history, the Alpha and Omega, the Son of God, Word made flesh, Judge of the living and the dead. When the last bit of Jewish autonomy was wiped out in 70 AD by the Romans, and the temple was destroyed and Jerusalem laid in ruins, those first century Christians were struggling to make sense of these tragic events and this belief that soon, very soon, Christ was returned had a powerful urgency. Christ was going to come back to judge their evil oppressors, to finally make all things right, to make all those prophecies of the Messiah come true. Scholars believe Matthew's gospel especially, was written for Jewish Christians who would have been deeply concerned about all that had just happened and were wrestling to try to understand how their experience of Christ's Spirit in their lives connected to these ideas of Christ coming back in some way, in power. But here we are, 2,000 years later. How do we read these passages? How do we understand these words about the Son of Man who's coming at an unexpected hour? If you look a little before what I chose for today, you'll see all the, you know, the images of the person in the field who's taken up in the, you know, all that stuff, and you, all those rapture notions that my dad always used to shake his head. He had a very bad experience as an adolescent with somebody who was really fixated on that stuff. What does it mean for us to keep awake? I want to offer a way we might hear these readings for us today. Not to rule out the end of the world possibilities. That surely may come. But Jesus was quite clear that none of us, including Jesus, knew when that would be or how it would be. And in the meantime, we're still told to keep awake, to watch. So what does that mean for us to be awake? Many traditions speak of spiritual awakening or enlightenment, don't they? Cynthia Bourgeau, in Sharing the Teachings of Gurdjieff, writes about the need to wake up as human beings by activating and utilizing all of ourselves, our three centers of knowing, not just our intellectual center, but our feeling emotional center and our moving bodily center. She says, by definition, if we're only using one of those ways of knowing, we are spiritually asleep. By definition, if you're just using your head, spiritually you're asleep. If you're just reacting from your feelings and not integrating it with your body and your mind, spiritually you're asleep. If you're just in your body and nothing else, spiritually you're asleep. Because our spirits need all of that alive, all of that integrated to be awake. Waking up, these spiritual traditions would say, is about learning to know and live with all of who we are. Not to know more, Cynthia would say, but to know with more of ourselves. That's being awake. Being awake spiritually is about tuning in, about coming alive to our true and full selves, our essence, who we are at the core of our being, who we were created to be. So it's interesting to realize that some recent translations of the Gospels don't say the literal words, the Son of Man, when they refer to Jesus. They think it better conveys the meaning of what he was trying to say when they say the human one, as in the fully alive human being, the enlightened one. In the second century, the church leader Irenaeus wrote that the glory of God is the human being fully alive. There seems to have been a much stronger emphasis on this kind of spiritual awakening and transformation of consciousness in the early writings and teachings of the church. We can see that today in these rediscovered writings like the Gospel of Thomas and the Gospel of Mary Magdalene. This emphasis has continued in Eastern Orthodox theology. But Western Christianity got really bogged down on just focusing on sin and salvation and has neglected this other way of understanding Jesus' teachings. But Jesus was a wisdom teacher, calling us to wake up, to have our consciousness enlightened, to have our hearts and minds transformed so we can be truly alive, fully human. I've come that you might have life and have it more abundantly, Jesus said. So being awake, it's about becoming more alive. It's about knowing we're connected in all of ourselves and knowing we're connected to all that is, knowing that it is in God that we live and move and have our beings, knowing we're part of this great interconnected web of relationship. Being awake is about seeing and living into those connections. It's about what might be called non-dual consciousness, right? The mystical understanding of what is real at the heart of reality. So as I thought about all this, I said to Bill last night driving home, what does our waking up and staying awake and being watchful have to do with our hope? How are they connected? I think being awake is about learning to be tuned in to all creatures. So it's about opening our minds and feelings and bodily selves to both beauty and pain, to both joy and suffering. It's no accident, I don't think, that the term woke has come to refer to people who are woken up to certain forms of injustice and oppression. Being woke is learning to live with compassion and love, without reservation, without protection. It's about following Jesus' way of self-giving love, and that can be really risky and painful. It can be really hard. Any day of the week, we know of things happening, we hear stories that can break our hearts. Last week, you may have heard the story of migrant families who've been stuck for months south of the border, who in their desperation are sending their small children alone across the bridge into this country, hoping that somehow children alone will be received more kindly and that somehow they will be finally placed with relatives as guardians. It is so painful to hear these stories. We want to turn away. We hear of destruction of our earth and its creatures, and we want to shut our ears and pretend it's not happening. We read and hear of the political crises of our country and many others right now, and we want to believe that our democracy is too strong for these kind of threats, and yet, where is the hope? Where is our hope? We are called to be awake and alert, to be open and aware of both the beautiful and the tragic, the suffering and the courage of humans, the dangers and opportunities of our times. We're called to be witnesses who stand in solidarity with suffering and who hold on to hope. How do we do that? Deep hope, I believe, is not ultimately based on us. It is not based on our own powers, our own human efforts to mend the world, to heal the brokenness, to love in spite of risk and pain. Deep hope comes from knowing that which is greater than us, the force, the flow of love and compassion, the power that is greater than all our brokenness and our divisions. Deep hope is grounded in the one who is greater than ourselves, the one we come to know as we wake up bit by bit. We are called to be alert and to be hopeful, to be watching for those subtle, surprising ways that God's love keeps breaking in to our world. When I was 10 and worried about Jesus coming back, I had a dream. It's the only dream I've ever had about Jesus. And in my dream, I can still see it. I remember he was walking down the road with some kids following along behind, and he was smiling, and he was walking up to my house. That's all I remember. But when I woke up, I wasn't worried anymore. It sounds really childish, and of course I was a kid. I was a child. And yet, something about that dream has stayed with me all my life. Fear not, Jesus said. My peace I give you, my hope. In both Jewish and Christian traditions, a recurring image of the person who is spiritually awake is the watchman, the one who is awake in the night, watching, waiting, looking for signs of the breaking in of God's love and power, praying for the world, holding all creation in love and hope. Across the centuries and still today, in monasteries and other spiritual communities, people get up in the wee hours of the morning. In the Benedictine tradition, it's called vigils. About 2 or 3 a.m., they get up. They are awake. And they gather to watch and pray, to hold the world in God's love through the thin places of the night. So if and when we are awake in the night from worry or restlessness or what modern-day medicine wants to call insomnia, we are not alone. The monks are praying, and maybe we are also being called to be awake in the night, to be watchers, to watch and pray and look for the coming of our God. Advent calls us to wake up, to come fully alive, to live as human beings fully alive for the glory of God. Advent calls us to wake up, to risk our hearts being broken as we are open to the suffering, the tragedy, and the beauty and the joy of life. Advent calls us to wake up, to watch and pray, holding on to hope and love, waiting and watching for the coming of Christ in our hearts, in our lives, and in our world.